Wanna know anything?
He asks, a hopeful hitch to his voice that I squish before it can crawl up my leg and pinch me. Creators know. I was just curious. Knowledge is power, and all that. When I have Khan erased from my memories, I'll need to snip all tethers to the past me. To Elowen. That now includes Pyrok. Probably a good thing, since he's really starting to grow on me. He clears his throat, tugging the string taut on his treats like he's suddenly lost his appetite.
Well,
he says, twirling his finger, a heaviness to his tone that wasn't there before.
Let's see.
I do a spin, my hair woven into a braid that starts at the crown of my head and brushes the bare skin at the small of my back, secured with one of the clamps I removed from the gown. A strip of gathered fabric is draped upon my breasts, others pulled tight across my hips before they fall in a gush of silver tendrils. I've never worn something so fierce. Flattering. Sexy. My favorite part is the twin triangles of sparkly sheer material tethered to my shoulders that chase me in a flutter of motion, like wispy wings. Though I left Khan's Melmer in the dwelling. Felt safer there. It was hard to get the back panel clipped in place, but I think I got it right, I murmur, glancing over my shoulder at it.
Looks right.
He pockets his treats, gaze sweeping across my gown again.
Though it appears you've left half your dress behind.
I did, I say, collecting my slippers before I kick my leg up over the wall. It's hot, and I've grown accustomed to being naked in the bush, though I don't tell him that. All that fabric felt unnecessary, so I unclipped a few tendrils here and there, crisscrossed some, tied knots in a few places, released my inner crafty bitch and let her shine. Pyrok chuckles, shaking his head.
Come on,
he says, strolling toward the city.
We're missing out on all the fun.
The Esplanade is a riot of color and cheer. We weave between a churn of eloquently dressed folk, masked kids darting around with sticks clutched in their hands, the long silver ribbons attached to the ends being twirled and flicked through the air. They roar like dragons as they chase each other, catch each other, fall in giggling heaps of ribbons, feathers, and makeshift wings. Everyone is masked. Crafted masterpieces fashioned from all different materials. Molten maw feathers and the scales of saber scythes. There are some made from sheets of copper bearing the dents from whatever tool was used to bang them into shape. Others from slopes of pearl that trail tendrils about their jowls like the elegant moon plumes. We near a cart that appears to be offering free serves of pre-poured molten mead, Pyrok going out of his way to snag a mug.
Want one?
I lift a brow. Bit early, isn't it? He gives me a look of genuine bafflement before he drains the entire thing in three deep gulps.
To hydrate?
He asks, drying his mouth with the back of his arm as he settles the now empty mug on the same tray, grabbing another.
Don't think so. The sun's fierce this day. And even if it wasn't, what better way to break my fast?
I shake my head, hoping he knows somebody strong enough to scrape him off the pave later, morbidly aware of just how hard it is to get a body his size to budge. Unless it's in pieces. We come to a path that shoots out from the shore and splits three ways, spearing toward a trio of risen platforms, each capped in a dome of shimmering air. Like bubbles large enough to house a small village were blown from beneath the splashing waves, paused mid-birth, then solidified. The domes look empty, my gaze cutting straight through what appears to be simple bulges of distorted air. The noise tells me otherwise, the space around me alive with the deep thump of drums and the drone of stringed instruments coming from ahead. Like the bows are being dragged across my ribs, planting the music inside my chest and making my blood sing. Others siphon down the path ahead, the stone knobbled with disc-shaped shells. It's almost flush with the loft's lapping surface, the folk traversing it appearing to walk on water as they glide toward the domes, some with crafted wings fluttering in their wake. Pyrok offers me his arm, and I tuck my hand in the crook of it, my heart a blunt and indomitable hammer against my ribs. We come to the junction where the path splits three ways, sun beating upon my face while we pause.
The three domes each house a full representation of the different nesting grounds,
Pyrok says, gesturing from left to right.
Netherin, Bogith, and Gondor.
Each path is saddled with an arch, the one on the left adorned with a twist of silver vines and white, frost-encrusted blooms, tendrils of mist leaking from their pointed petals despite the heat. Netherin. The middle one is clothed in a burst of feather-tipped flowers that match the varying vibrant shades of a molten moss plumage. Bogith. My gaze drifts to the one on the right, finding it bound in thorny vines, the rounded black blooms singed at the tips and smelling like scorched wood. Gondor. Where's the king? I ask, and Pyrok gestures to the right, looking down at me with what I picture as a raised brow expression. Hard to see much with his mask on. That narrows it down, I say, gaze bumping between the other two before I tug him to the left, stepping beneath the fall of mist that smells fresh and crispy. If Khan wants to dance, he can have fun finding me first.
Interesting choice,
Pyrok muses as we stroll down the path, stuck behind a couple of slow-moving folk garbed in bustles of faux plumage. I've never been much further south than the border between the fade and the shade. I shrug. I'm curious. He clears his throat, the folk before us tugging at the waggle of air, parting it like a curtain before disappearing into the dome with a puff of fog. Our steps slow, and Pyrok grips the invisible barrier like he's handling a tent flap, pulling it back. Another pour of fog seeps out and tangles with our feet, the drumming thump pounding against my chest in rhythm with my thrashing heart. A flock of something takes flight within my belly. Something that makes no sense. Khan's not here. He's elsewhere. Why won't my feet move forward?
You okay? I didn't take you for the hesitating sort.
I search for a sharpened edge I can use to throw something quippy back, finding them all blunt and rounded, soft and floppy. I swallow, still staring at that triangular opening to the swirl of dusky motion beyond. No, I don't think I am okay. I'm fine, I lie, then straighten my spine, force my feet forward, and shove past the flap, engulfed by a swallow of darkness. Rave. Chapter 72. Each step forward is another crunch of my slippers through the layer of fluffy snow, another whisk of the fog churning about my feet. I've stepped into another world, the sky a stretch of black velvet buttoned with pearly moons, scribbled with ribbons of aurora that cast my eerie surroundings in a flood of silver light. Clusters of hexagonal ice pillars reach for the moons, each large enough to support a nesting moon plume. It's like standing within a painted depiction of Netherin, minus the deadly chill, minus the threat of being swooped by a broody moon plume protecting her clutch from thieves who'd risk the climb up one of those sheer, seemingly unscalable pillars in the efforts to snatch an egg. The air feels hollow, but for the thud of the drums and a harp's lilting tune, like someone called for Claude to sit so chillingly still within the confines of this dome. A hollowness that nests in my chest. An invisible weight I can't grasp the shape of. The origin of. Shaking it off, I step into the swirl of masked folk tiding to the smooth, ethereal melody as though they're caught in some sort of trance. I clear my throat, whipping a crystal flute off the tray of a passing server. "What's this called?" I ask, gesturing to the azure liquid spilling milky mist down the sides.
"Moonplume's breath,"
the server says, his lips tinged blue from the cold, a line forming between his brows as he takes in my scant garb.
"There are fur shoals by the entrance."
"I'm fine. Perfectly fine. Thanks." I continue on, setting the frosted rim of the glass upon my lips. I take a sip, filling my mouth with sour sweetness, crisp and so cold it's an icy balm to my tongue, throat, and belly. There's a momentary thinning of the crowd, and my stare delves into the chasm between two lofty pillars. My heart skips a beat, and I pause, spinning the iron ring on my finger. I'm certain there's something between them I need to see, that if I don't go and investigate immediately, something bad will happen. Not sure what. Feels important.
"Is everything all right?"
"Definitely not." It's on the tip of my tongue to ask if Pyrok knows how I ended up with the moon plume I supposedly charmed in my previous existence. To ask if I raided a nest for an egg, or perhaps inherited someone else's previously claimed beast. To ask if I've been here before. The real here. "Of course," I say, flashing him a smile over my shoulder that falls off my face the moment I stab my stare forward again and charge through the crowd.
"Where are we going?"
he yells as I weave between bodies draped in heavy layers of leather and fur, between tables and stools, moving toward the tallest cluster of pillars in the epicenter of the celebration. "Don't know," I murmur, taking another sip of my drink, holding the puddle of chill in my mouth until I'm verging on a frostbit tongue before I swallow it down. The crowd thins, giving way to a barricade of guards standing shoulder to shoulder, barring entry to a frail path that appears to thread between two immense icy pillars. Bronze armor molds to their bodies like saber-scythe scales, black masks covering the top half of their faces, dark fur shawls draped around their shoulders. "What's behind there?" I ask Pyrok when he finally catches up to me, a moonplume's breath in one hand, the other cupping a dragon's egg filled with curly fried things capped in a glob of white sauce.
"A game table for the high flyers," he says. "You don't go in there unless you have a lot of gold to waste and an ego large enough to absorb a few blows."
Huh. Not what I was expecting to find. But now that I'm here, I spin and pat down Pyrok's pockets, discovering a bulge in the left one that I dig out to the tune of his disgruntled mutterings.
"You know what you remind me of?"
he grinds out as I wave the pouch of gold at the guards who part ways to let us through.
"A Woto."
"Met one of those while I was in prison for serial murder," I say, loud enough a few of the guards turn their heads, looking at me over their shoulders. "Nice fellow. Kept his face hair smooth and slick despite the squalor they kept us in. What game are we playing?"
"Scrippy,"
Pyrok mutters, following me along a frail path woven between the lofty pillars that certainly aren't quite cold enough to be real ice. Perhaps just stone ruined to look like it.
"You play?"
I throw his pouch in the air, snatching it. "Little bit."
"Great,"
he gripes.
"Can't wait to lose a sack of gold to a clutch of elitists who use pebbles of the stuff to decorate their garden beds."
"That's not the right attitude." I take a few more turns down the zigzagged path, tossing back another deep glug of my moonplume's breath. "Take it King Burn doesn't pay too well?"
"Very well. For sweet fuck all, if I'm to be perfectly honest. Not the point."
There's an edge to his voice that makes me pause, glancing over my shoulder, seeing a hardness to the line of his mouth that wasn't there before, his own moonplume's breath entirely untouched. Odd. He usually tosses drinks back like they're split moments away from evaporation.
Care to elaborate?
Care to get this over with so I can find a barrel of molten mead large enough to drown myself in?
He jerks his chin, urging me on.
Quick, before my squin curls get cold.
Frowning, I continue forward, wondering if Pyrok has a prickly history with some of these high flyers. Another jagged bend, and the path opens to a wide cavern, like somebody took a spoon to the ice and carved out a dead-end dollop. A hexagon-shaped table sits in the center, six high-backed chairs perched around it, all but one inhabited. My feet still. Four males clad in fine black garb and sooty fur cloaks wield a fan of game shards close to their puffed chests, each bearing the same simple half-face masks sculpted from polished gold. A fifth seat is occupied by a creature I'm somewhat familiar with. An Octomar. The bulbous creature's skin is a model of icy shades, allowing it to blend almost entirely with our surroundings, its numerous vine-like appendages coiled around a mound of gold piled before it. No eyes. Just a tumorous head, the skin thin enough to garner a view through to its large, luminous brain that's throbbing a little. My gaze drops to its mouth, a pouty pucker that looks harmless, though I've seen them stretched, seen how many teeth those things pack. Enough to chomp off an arm with a single crunch. Seems fitting that these high flyers have the company of such a rare and coveted creature, given the fact that Octomars can weave promises upon flesh, binding them to blood, body, and soul. Each of the Fae garnishes me with narrow-eyed perusals, one pulling on a pipe, blowing rings of ruddy smoke. His stare spears past me to Pyrok, and his mouth curls into a sly grin.
Looks like our little flame is not so little anymore.
Pyrok's energy stiffens. The male draws another deep puff, blowing a second ring of smoke into the air.
Come to play with us, have we?
He gestures to the table adorned with a scrippy spread, crystal cups of amber liquid, and wiggly stacks of gold coins gathered in piles.
You know how much I love it when you have debts to pay.
The other three males chuckle. I cut another glance over my shoulder, but Pyrok's stare is pinned to the male smoking the pipe, his cheeks ablaze as he white-knuckles his flute of moonplume's breath. The tips of my fingers itch.
Not him,
I say, whipping my head around and swaying toward the scrippy table with a pep in my step. All the laughter snips, five pairs of eyes trailing my every move as I settle into the vacant seat, set my glass on the table, loosen the drawstring on Pyrok's sack of gold, and empty its contents. Gold coins puddle before me.
Finish your game, then deal me in.
Silence prevails while I busy my hands, stacking Pyrok's coins into tidy piles somewhat smaller than the mounds packed before each of the leering males. The one to my right settles his hand on my arm, and I still, looking past his mask to bold brown eyes.
Sweet thing. Although I admire your enthusiasm, your tiny pile is only large enough to buy you in,
he croons, one of the Octomar's tentacles slithering out and wrapping around my gold, tugging every coin from me in a clattering commotion.
Whatever will you bet with?
I pinch the tip of his finger, peeling it from my arm. I'm not sweet, and I'm certainly not a thing. I flick the male's hand back toward his own allotment of personal space, then look to the Octomar, palm up. Buy me in with a favor owed, to each of the other players.
Rave!
Pyrok charges forward, not reaching me before the creature's tentacle scribbles upon my skin, leaving a tickling trail.
Fucking fuck!
He pelts his flute at the icy pillar, glass shattering, blue liquid seeping down the sides with a tumble of fog. His squin is the next to sail through the air, the eggshells smashing, spraying the floor with a litter of fried treats quickly lost beneath the reconverging fog.
I need to go and find...
Wait, I say, a request in my hard stare for him to stay right here. For him to watch. I mouth a silent please, and he stills, taking in the males now polishing off their game, the Octomar cutting their winnings and gathering shards. Lips a thin line, Pyrok clears his throat, then leans against the pillar, arms crossed as he offers me a small nod.
So lovely of you to stay,
the male with the pipe drawls, sliding Pyrok a slimy look that makes my hackles rise.
I can't wait to show you how real males play with pretty females who have too much confidence and not enough sense.
I laugh, scanning my opponents from atop the fan of illustrated creatures staring back at me. The Octomar's tentacles spear out, slicing into the stacks of gold before each of my opponents, collating a mighty, toppling sum that makes my brows rise. Guess my favors are a rather worthy pledge. Good for me.
Does the pretty thing want the first roll?
Another male drawls, and it's an effort not to choke that title from his throat, wondering how he'd feel if I gave him a derogatory name that whittled him down to nothing more than a well-cut piece of meat. Course not. Gaze cast on my shards, I reorder my hand. Then you'll contribute my win to the advantage, and we can't have that. He chuckles, holding my eye contact as he picks up the crystal mug and shakes it, the contents rattling.
Your confidence is beguiling, however ill-spent,
he spits out, then tosses the dice. Rave. Chapter 73. I slap my moon plume on the final stomp of shards, flashing the four seething males a smile so wide it makes my cheeks ache. Are you all sick of me yet? The Octomar tangles its tentacles around a mountain of gold that absolutely weighs more than I do, sliding it toward me. A smoking pipe goes sailing across the table, scattering my latest winning play in all its glory. The male who threw it shoves to a stand, snarling as he stalks from the chamber in a flutter of black and gold. Keep practicing! I holler after him, straightening my piles, flashing the three remaining males another smile that does little to sponge their antagonistic leers. Another round? I'll accept favors owed if you're not carrying more gold. Or your masks, they look hefty. Not to mention how much I delight in seeing the faces of the pricks I forced into submission with a few lucky hands, earning enough gold to not only pay Pyrok back immediately, with interest, but also purchase a small village, or perhaps the patronage of a charmed molten maw for the rest of eternity. Certainly long enough to hunt Rex Zaros until I get the chance to feed him his own entrails. Unless you want time to reinforce your crumbling egos? I ask, batting my lashes. The air tightens, heats. The males about the table stand so abruptly their chairs go skidding across the ice, all three of them turning toward the exit and bowing at the hip, holding the stance for a long, tense moment. Long enough that I surmise we have a visitor. Looking left, I see the exit shadowed by the imposing male my body immediately responds to, heart racing, a flock of those fluttery things taking flight within my belly. Con's an image of muscle and poise, in brown pants and a leather tunic embellished with bronze saber-scythe scales accentuating his broad shoulders. His bare arms are crossed, his pale scars standing out in stark contrast against his tawny skin. His mouth cuts a harsh line, a plain bronze mask casting the top half of his face in mystery, the pierce of his cinder stare catching me despite it. snagging my breath. He's crowned in bronze, the metal wreath perhaps once reaching skyward in 8 points, now melted in places, folded down, like it got caught in a blaze of dragon flame that almost turned it molten. His mask almost melds with it, accentuates it. He moves, his muscular thighs tensing with each powerful shift forward, the thump of his boots pounding in rhythm to my galloping heart. He holds my stare every step of the way, and I picture Rygun clawing through the cavern like a shifting mountain range. All the muscles in my body clench, primed to buffer his vast presence that crushes against me. Finally, breaking our eye contact, Khan sweeps his stifling attention across the high flyers.
Out,
he growls, his voice a violent slash. The remaining three males scurry toward the exit with empty hands and even emptier pockets, another dip of their heads toward the Burn King. Ripping my gaze away, I look to where Pyrok was standing, surprised to find him already gone. Damn. He must have dipped out during that last round while I was slapping down my moon plume, molten maw, and saber scythe to the tune of disgruntled mutterings. Too bad, considering I drew most of my delight from the fact that those assholes had somehow wronged him in the past. The last male disappears down the frail pathway, leaving only myself, Khan, and the Octomore still seated in the dealer's throne, apparently exempt from the king's ferocious order. Khan moves around the table, gripping the back of the seat opposite mine, knuckles so blanched I imagine the piece of furniture seconds from shattering. Everything about him is immense, like a shadow that eclipses every light source, swaying my ability to see anything other than him. My small stint alone with the memories of us gulped me into his gravity. Now I'm falling. Too heavy. Too fast. This sort of plummet that ends with a crater large enough to swallow half the world.
This is not what I meant when I asked you to dance,
he says, stare dropping to my pile of gold. I draw my lungs full of his drugging scent, flashes of memory carving into my chest like razor blades. Me, planting a constellation of kisses upon the scars on his back and arms, pretending I could mend them with my lips while he chopped vegetables for our soup. Him, teaching me how to shape clay into bowls, mugs, and plates, his hands and arms smothered in so much of it that eventually made its way onto me. Us, moving together beneath a shaft of silver light, my chest pitted with a noxious seed of fear. Like every touch, every kiss, every whisper of breath on my skin brought us one step closer to an unknown end. I was someone to you, I whisper. Someone important.
Correct.
Until... The word is a stab, the sort of offensive motion that comes before my mind catches up to the shift of my surroundings or truly registers the lurking danger.
You bound with another male,
Khan answers equally fast, and my lungs empty in a shuddered exhale as all the warmth escapes my cheeks, as I try and fail to grapple that prickly reality into a shape smooth enough to swallow. That piece of puzzle feels jagged and abrupt, ill-fitting, the sort of piece I'll need to hammer into place.
Would you like to know who?
No, I say, my gaze dropping to chase the Octomar's slithering motions, the creature gathering shards, shuffling them. Over the past who knows how long, I've become fondly familiar with the us that existed within the jungle home. With Khan. You don't simply scratch an itch with Khan Vagor, then throw him away and move on to another. You peel back your skin and open your ribs to the male. You tuck him somewhere deep and safe, fight others off with weapons forged from secrets sharp enough to slice, then perish with those secrets clutched close to your chest. There is no way I gave him up for anyone else. Willingly. And there's only one answer to that particular riddle. Elowyn had secrets just as barbed as my own. But secrets earn their title for a reason, often painted in an illusionary veil because they're painful to look in the eye. Khan hasn't felt the shape of my emotions while we were together in that place, but I have. And I'm almost certain my lost memories are a blessing in disguise. That Elowyn's secrets hurt. I have no desire to uncork that bottle and condemn myself to sipping the poison it undoubtedly holds, if even for a moment. After all that, I say, lifting my stare, you still saved my life.
Yes.
Twice. The right side of his mouth kicks up in a half smile that wrestles with my heartstrings.
Hard to turn down an opportunity to gift you the severed head of a male who made you bleed.
I open my mouth, close it. My next words are rasped past a dry throat. I don't understand how you still look at me like you want me. Silence prevails. Tension thickens, his eyes burning embers when he finally says,
Rafe, you could flay me down the middle. And I'd still fucking love you.
All the breath shoves from my lungs. Love. The word is a quiet death that slips away without so much as a whispered goodbye. An abrupt shove into an eternal loneliness I'll never deign myself to claw free of. Such a waste of that big, beautiful heart, I whisper, and his eyes flare. I sever our eye contact. Looking down at the shards the Octomar has been collating into shuffled piles. Khan makes a deep rumbling sound, and I swear the entire world shudders around me. Creators. I think I missed the meaning of the note, mask, and gown. I don't think he wants to pretend at all. I think he asked me to come here hoping to rekindle whatever we had in the past, back when we thrived within those hallowed walls. Hoping I'm still the same female beneath the shell. I'm not. There's nothing there but scorched stone, heartbreak, and a million reasons why I can't. But perhaps this magical send-off that Elowyn and Khan deserve can still be salvaged. There are two options. I signal for the Octomar to deal around. Khan's gaze follows the creature's slithering motions before impaling me with another stare that promises everything I want, everything I don't.
Which are?
I leave right now with this pile of gold, I say, eyeing my impressive stack, and hire a molten maw from your Carter hutch for the foreseeable future.
So you can hunt the one who turns your back into mincemeat?
Among other things. I grit out past clenched teeth. A moment of perfect stillness while he studies me with such precision, I'm certain he's hunting for answers in the flex of my eyes.
Or?
We play. I gesture to the spread laid out between us, already dealt. A wager. Khan looks from me to the Octomar, down at the shards, before pulling his chair into place and taking a seat. My brow bumps up as he presents his left palm to the Octomar. I follow suit, but with my right. Holding my stare, Khan says,
If I win, you will answer three questions from me. Truthfully.
I open my mouth, words clogging on my tongue as the tip of the Octomar's tendril flicks across my palm in etching trails. The pledge's hot pulse sludging through blood and sloshing against bone. Bastard. The Octomar finishes his prickly inscription while secrets squirm in my belly like a knot of worms. I clear my throat, scrunching my tingling hand into a ball. And if I win, we pretend we're the ones who existed in that place I suspect you built for us, but only until next aurora rise. at which stage you'll owe me a single wish. Confusion swims in his eyes as the Octomar scrawls upon his palm.
What happens once the Aurora rises?
Not important.
What happens?
I sigh, gather my allotted shards off the table, and begin sorting them, stare cast on the vibrant illustrations. I will have a mind weft smudge you from my brain. Get back to reality. The wish is precautionary. I need a full stop in my back pocket, something I can stake in the ground if it comes to it. He may think it's cruel, but I refuse to barter with his well-being. And loving me? It's a fucking death wish. I shift my hushling to the far left, move my Enthu to the right. Silence stretching for so long, I glance at Khan over my fanned deck. He's watching me, his stare so intense it almost siphons all the breath from my lungs. Not that I let on. What? I ask, tipping my head to the side.
You lost someone.
My heart splats against my ribs. My mouth opens, closes, opens again. When I can't forge my scrambling thoughts into a single word to throw at him, I slam my fan face down on the table and shove to a stand, stalking toward the exit. Fuck this. Fuck him. Fuck everything. Something long and leathery lashes around my throat, tightening, snagging my ability to breathe or speak. I try to weave my fingers beneath the noose and pry it loose, but fail to get any traction. All the blood in my head threatening to burst my bulging eyes. My mouth gapes, and I fall to my knees, mist wafting up like reaching claws. A shadow shifts into my atmosphere, my gaze rolling to Khan, now crouching before me. Arms resting on his bent knees, he banks his head to the side.
You can't leave, Rave.
His finger comes up to support the underside of my chin, tipping my head so I'm forced to meet his blazing perusal.
We're bound to the table until the game is through.
I look at the Octomar now shoved to its full, unimaginable height, the beast's puckered lips pulled back in a gaping yowl that exposes hundreds of sharp teeth, big and small, long and stumpy. Khan helps me up, then nudges me toward my chair. Only when my hand slaps upon the back of it does the creature let me loose, breath heaving into my starved lungs.
Sit,
Khan growls from the other side of the table. I swallow, rubbing my aching throat as I look at him, seeing a fire in his eyes that reminds me of the bulb of dragon flame nesting at the base of Rygun's throat. Chugging the rest of my moon plume's breath in three deep gulps, I slam the flute back on the table, clear my throat, and obey, knowing exactly what Khan is going to ask should he win this round. What have I done? Rave. Chapter 74. I toss the dice, rolling a 4, deciding to pluck the 20th shard from the top left corner, keeping my face smooth when my gaze coasts over the smocks, a black swirling splotch that can transform into any creature, immediately inheriting its strengths, its weaknesses, a risky shard that can't represent the same creature as any other played in the final lay or else it's immediately void, that play lost. Problem is, by the end, all the best shards are generally played, leaving it useless. A waste of space when you could be holding something genuinely valuable. I pinch the flotty from my fan and set it back in the empty space.
You know,
Khan says, rolling the dice, taking a shard from the square and threading it amongst his hand, filling the gap with one of his previous shards.
I taught my sister how to play this game.
She any good? I ask, scattering the dice.
Excellent.
I purse my lips, pick a shard, look at it, set it straight back down again. Better than you?
Hasn't beaten me once,
he mumbles, tossing down. My eyes almost roll out of my head. How conceited of you.
Just hopeful, Moonbeam. Ever hopeful.
I arch a brow in question.
Unless you were playing Scrippy with Slotra while you were bowled up in the sky, I have at least an eon on you.
He shrugs.
I pray to the creators that it gives me the advantage I need to win.
I slay him with a stare while he lifts another shard, swapping something out, his features cast in stone as he spears me through with a simmering gaze.
Your turn.
Right. Clearing my throat, I sweep the dice into my hand and flick it across the table, swapping my Salmoth for the Molten Maw. He rolls, but rather than pick a card from the board, he slaps the Woto on the table, its furry face leering out at me from the upturned shard. Fuck. I flash him a smile, further fanning my deck as I extend my arm across the table to give him easy access to whatever card he decides to steal. Holding my stare, he pinches the Molten Maw, and I grind my teeth so loud I'm certain he can hear it.
Apologies,
he says before he's even had a chance to look at the powerful shard in his hand, threading it into his fan while still holding my eye contact. Don't want your apology. I toss the dice, my mood immediately brightening when I pick up the moon plume. I certainly won't be offering one if I beat you. He throws the dice again, lifting a shard and swapping it out for another.
And the mind weft. Will you apologize for that?
Clearing my throat, I collect the dice in the cup, giving it a shake. He lifts his gaze, meeting mine as he says,
Scrippy.
The dice flies free, bouncing across the board. Already? Silence. Internally, I groan. Placing my Nilical, he trumps with a Colk. He places his Molten Maw next, forcing me to reveal my moon plume.
Ouch,
he says, and a sour smile spreads across my face. I slam down a Swamp Hag, he trumps with a Velvet Trog. Teeth gritted, I play my Hushling, my remaining power card, seeing as he ended the game so fucking quickly. A beat passes before he slowly, almost gently, sets his Doom Quill on it, effectively handing me the play. I look up, catching his stare, holding it, holding my breath, too.
If I'm losing you again, I need to know why.
He implores, his gravelly words shaped more like an apology than an admittance. My brow furrows as he pulls another shard from his fan and settles it on the final spot. I break his stare, looking down. My heart plummets so fast I almost vomit. He sets the rest of his shards face down on the table and leans back in his chair, crossing his arms. I release a shuddered breath, scouring the heavily tusked face of the roaring saber scythe, a ball of red flame illuminated at the back of its throat, the only other shard that can possibly trump it already placed in the second stomp. My moon plume. Well played, I rasp. He dips his head. I tap my finger against my shards, dropping my stare to my remaining spread, filling my lungs before I pull the smocks free and set it on his saber scythe. A moment of pause, then...
What is it?
A tick. The smock swirls, then congeals into the shape of the tiny, bulbous bug. Khan's eyes darken, a heaviness settling, like gravity just bore down on us. Your saber scythe is feral, I whisper. Now it's dead, slain, unable to so much as lift its wings and soar into the sky to rest with its ancestors. All the color leaches from his shard, like the saber scythe just perished between us. Silence. The promise that was scrawled across my palm squiggles free, releasing me from its clutch. Khan draws a deep breath through his nose, exhaling slower than a setting aurora.
Impressive,
he says, barely moving his mouth. Thank you. Another stretch of silence burdens the space between us, his eyes dark shadows still set on the final play. I clear my throat, filling my cheeks with a blow of air I audibly release.
So, is there somewhere for me to store my gold so we can enjoy the festival without lugging it everywhere?
Khan blinks, drawing another deep breath. He lifts his head, evading my eye contact.
I have guards beyond the exit. I'll send them in to bag it up and take it to the hutch so it's ready for your departure.
I nod, more of those fluttery things swarming through my chest at the thought of what this cycle could hold. Anything's possible. We get to live this fantasy out, then I can get back to living my solitary life lifted by the knowledge that he's safe from whatever curse seems to follow me around like an invisible scythe, slaying anybody I form attachments to. I'll need to pay Pyrok back the gold I borrowed.
I'll see it done.
The words are so clipped, they sting. There's a hardness in his eyes I've never seen before. Cold. Detached.
So,
he says, and a chill scuttles up my spine as his upper lip peels back from his canines.
Would you like me to come around and bend you over the table?
He tips his head to the side.
Fuck you right here so we can get it over with. Or would you like to draw it out a bit?
I drop my gaze to the table. He doesn't get it. If I wanted to fuck, I'd find someone without the laden baggage to scratch the itch with. A few lusty glances here, the crook of a finger there. I could have some faceless male in a darkened corner in no time, parting the tendrils of my skirt and giving me what I need without the pressure of leaving with our fates intertwined. This is not about that. All I want from this slumber is to allow myself to love, or at the very least, try. For him. For me. Though I may not be the one he lost, I could give him the goodbye I don't believe he got, but undoubtedly deserves. I could pretend my heart is soft and warm and vulnerable, that I'm worthy of everything this spectacular male embodies, even though a stone in my gut tells me that's not the case, that Khan Vagor is too good for me in every way, shape, and form. But I won't think about that right now. No. I'll save that thought for when I'm stepping into the curly quill, for when I'm preparing to pass Vrun a sack of gold, then beg him to remove Khan like a prickly weed when he's actually a forest. Lush, strong, beautiful, too vulnerable to the nip of flames for me to bear. Maybe he'll follow my lead, remove me. Perhaps this slumber will give him the freedom to finally say goodbye to the female he used to know, to bury the past, find happiness with someone worthy of his big, warm-hearted love. Perhaps. I stand, move around the table, Khan's stare still speared at my now empty chair when I finally reach his side and extend my hand. His gaze dips to it, then lifts to my smile. My eyes. Dance with me, I whisper. The ball in his throat rolls as his eyes take on slightly softer lines, as my heart thumps harder. Those fluttering things inside my chest multiplying, nuzzling against my ribs and making my entire body tingle. Please. A moment of pause before he stands, towering above me, ignoring my outstretched hand.
Lead the way, prisoner 73.
I take his hand anyway, then tug him toward the exit.
Khan. Chapter 75. Rave's hand is so warm and alive, snagged around my wrist. Such a contrast to our frosty, jagged surroundings. To this shard of bitter emotion lodged between my ribs, swung with the same hand she now uses to lead me through the pulse of celebration. Some folk glance at me as we pass, then at the breathtaking female dragging me along, weaving us through the throng in a trail of silver tendrils that gust behind her. She looks at me over her shoulder, eyes like glaciers, her soft smile the gleaming slash of a blade that strikes home, bleeding the vulnerable organ that so eagerly pumps for her. Only her. The only beam of light I'll ever need or want in this world. My love for her sitting like a moon in my chest. Only this moon will never fall. No matter how hard she tugs on it. She snags a crystal flute from a passing server, then downs the drink in a single gulp, thumping the empty glass atop a table on our way past. Stealing glances at the sky, she stills within a somewhat less crowded area of the dance space, framed by clusters of icy columns, only a few other couples dotted about, swaying to the beat. Rave lifts my arm above her head, and I stand still as she closes her eyes and twirls, smiling. Kicking up the fog and packing my lungs full of stones. The aurora casts her skin in a silver sheen, her smile so wide her dimples pucker. Dimples I've not seen since she burst into laughter at Ma's special place, reviving me despite the vicious words that followed. Before that, not since the last slumber we spent together, when the aurora was just as flush. Another slumber we spent pretending. If I'd known that slumber would be our last, I would have spoken the words I'd been edging around for cycles, begged her to take my hand forever, despite my weaknesses, my shortcomings, begged her to break from the Tri-Council's decision for us, because I thought that's what she wanted, us. That the creators had blessed me as the one she chose to love. A very big part of me still believes it, refuses to accept that what we had was light and flimsy enough to scrunch up and toss in the bin. And perhaps that makes me weak, soft of heart, incompetent, just like Pa used to say. He proved me right too many times before I took his head. Yet here I am again, standing stationary while Rave dances around me with my soft heart in her fucking hands, dripping blood all over the floor. Here I am again, looking at her like she crafted the world with a few whispered words. Every sweep of her eyes, twisting that jagged weapon lodged in my chest. Only this time, I'm not blind or in denial. This time I fucking see. She's hurting. Lost someone. Maybe more than one. She thinks she doesn't deserve this. Us. That if she opens her heart and lets me in, something bad will happen. It most certainly will, but what she doesn't see is that her love bolsters me, strengthens me. When she shines that light my way, nothing can hurt me. Nothing. Dance with me, she pleads, grabbing my right hand. She wraps herself around me, giving me a nudge so I untangle from her hold like she's the lead. Feels fitting. She coaxes me to twist with her to the music's droning tide, and I give her the bare minimum, turning as she drags me about the floor, feeling like I'm standing in the path of an impending moonfall, too transfixed on its plummeting beauty to step to the side, to save myself. She spins into my arms this time, so close, so unbearably far away. It's tempting to accept this scrap she's offering, to lean in and embrace this goodbye to Elowyn, Rave seems to think I want.
You did request a dance, correct? She asks, looking up at me from beneath a thick fan of black lashes.
Correct.
Doesn't look like it, she jests, brows raised. You have to actually move your body. Shocking, I know.
She tosses herself free in a churn of silver tendrils and whisking fog, boasting much of her body to a loose ring of curious onlookers who've gathered behind my fence of austere guards to watch her dance. They look at her like the enigma she is, more untouchable than clothed, while she moves as though oblivious to their stares, lost in her swirl of make-believe. I clear my throat, the song taking on a slower, deeper drone. She spins toward me, tripping on a tendril. I dip low and catch her just before she hits the ground, my arm bracing her bare back, our noses almost touching. Her wide eyes lock with mine as she puffs a breath upon my face. The celebration falls away. The crowd. The song. There's nothing but a pair of big azure eyes. Our tangling exhales. And the welcome weight of her in my arms. A fucking moon could fall and I wouldn't notice. Her gaze drifts to my mouth, and my heart becomes a ferocious beast pounding for release, begging me to crush the barrier between us and kiss her, like throwing myself to a nest of saber scythes to be torn apart, slowly, painfully.
Was this a bad idea? She rasps.
Yes. Very. She squeezes her eyes shut, and I can almost feel her mind ticking before she spears me through with that glacier gaze.
We'll stop. I'm sorry. I wanted to give you
the perfect goodbye. She opens her mouth, closes it, a flash of tender embarrassment staining her beautiful cheeks. I don't want the perfect goodbye. I want to say hello to Rave, whoever that is, whoever's tucked beneath that hardened exterior. I want to know her, be around her, love her.
I'll go, she whispers. I'm sorry.
I move, hearing her sharp intake as I throw her into a spin in tune with the song's crescendo. She stills, eyes twin pools of blazing blue wide enough to swallow me whole. Backing out of a battle, prisoner 73, I ask, forcing a fake smile. I didn't take you as a quitter, but perhaps I was wrong. She's silent for a beat before another smile breaks across her face. So big and bold, her dimples pucker again. She smooths her features, clears her throat, then lifts her chin.
Perhaps I don't want to dance with you after all.
Lies, I growl, then spin her back into my arms, crushing her body against mine. Perfectly. Too perfectly. You want to dance with me, Rive. You want to love me too, but you're in the way of yourself. I don't know what happened to her after Slatra's fall, but I can see the fractures she hides so well, the missing pieces. The pain. She's just like Slatra, just as broken. What I wouldn't do to help her feel whole again, to piece her back together, much the same as I did her dragon. Weathering the cuts to my flesh, the frostbite, the endless fucking regressions, when the entire thing would crumble and I'd have to start all over again. And again. And again. Keeping her tucked close, I move with her, breath stilling when she settles her head on my chest like she means to stay. Braiding my heartstrings into a perfect rope, she tugs. Forcing myself to relax again, I graze my fingers up and down the silky skin at the small of her back, maneuvered by lures of the past. She shivers against me in the way she always did, deepening my grave with another shoveled scoop. It's an effort not to groan, to break away and smash my fist into a wall until my knuckles bleed. I should have let her walk away rather than pretending I'm okay with this. But I am weak, soft-hearted. I drift my touch up the side of her long, elegant neck, and her entire body trembles, melting against me, our fingers interlacing like a quiet dance of their own. "Your hands know me," she whispers. "Yes," I murmur against her hair. "Know you, crave you, worship you." Her breath hitches. I could go on. Tell her our bodies clash like they were made to tangle for eternity. That I could spread her in the mist and make her body sing. Have her unravel in seconds from a few tender touches coupled with a nuzzled nip to her neck, just below her ear. I'd mulch her enemies with my bare hands to see those dimples, or at the very least, pave a bloody path for her to slaughter them herself. I was living in eternal solitude, more than prepared to spend forever feasting on her memory. Yet here she is, fully intent on erasing me like a stain, despite knowing, at least in part, what we had. What we were. History is repeating itself all over again, and it makes me want to rip the fucking world in two, crack it open in hopes of finding the answers to the heartbreaking riddle of her. A deeper beat pounds at the air. Folks scream, and my stare whips up at the same moment a large saber scythe plummets from the sky, straight toward the dome. A buck, based on his heavily spiked tail. He spreads his wings and scoops around, giving us his back, looking toward a second saber scythe, now charging him from above, jaw cranked so wide I can see the churn of fire welling on the back of its tongue. Fuck! Folk drop, flattening to the ground. I tuck Rave behind me as a plume of dragon flame pours across the dome, preparing to catch it should my blood runes fail. The ruddy blaze clamors against my shield, volcanic heat boiling my blood until I'm certain my organs are mush. The beast bites down, gnashing the air, and a cool breath of relief fills my lungs when they turn into a skyward chase. The smaller beast luring the bigger one to court her closer to the moons. I spin, heart plunging as I scan the now empty dance floor, screaming folk still ducking beneath tables or clustering at the base of frosty sculptures. Rive, nowhere to be seen. Like she vanished. My heart resumes its rampant beat. When my stare latches onto the slab of shadow between two ice pillars, the entry to the maze. Rive peeks around the corner, her gaze cast on the retreating dragons, almost like she's hiding from them. Something fierce rises inside me like a boil of liquid flame, setting every cell on edge. Rive doesn't hide. Not unless she's got something to hide. I frown, studying the tightness around her eyes, her blanched knuckles a tribute to her crushing grip on the ice. Certain I'm peering through a looking glass to something that wasn't meant for me. But I've seen it now. I've fucking seen it. Her eyes widen. Face pales. She inches deeper into the maze before she spins on her heel and sprints out of sight moments before another flare of dragon flame ignites the sky, all but confirming my suspicions. Something cold and jagged slides through my chest, and I chase, weaving through a tangle of thin paths pressed between pillars of ice that reach for the moons above, following the intangible path of her butterberry scent. I take a sharp left that's a dead end, dragging my hand across the frosty wall, inhaling her on the tips of my fingers. Like she ran in here, slapped her hand against the wall when she realized there's no way out, then turned around and sprinted back the other way. Another blow of dragon flame ignites the sky, threading down the clefts between the paths, warming my skin with its luminous heat, the blaze of light making the ice look like it's burning. But not just that. The pale remnants of otherwise invisible runes sketched into the pillars glow. Runes that cast the terracotta stone in a glamour of frosty ice. Runes only visible because of the dragon flame. Frowning, I look up, watching the saber scythes wrestle above. Again, skimming so close, their spear-headed tails threaten to slash through the dome as they tussle for dominance. Do you have something to hide, Moonbeam? Her huffed response comes almost instantly, brought to me on an icy breeze, like she's standing right beside me. What an absurd assumption. I don't miss the nervous hitch to her voice, a rasp I've heard only once before, when I flicked the lid on my weld back when I found her in the prison cell, revealing a bulb of Rygun's dragon flame I used to ignite the mended wound on her head. I squeezed my eyes shut, threading my hands behind my neck and gripping tight.